Hello and welcome to Natural Focus. My name is David Boag and this podcast is dedicated as a celebration of the natural world. Many of you would know that I lecture several nights a week throughout the country. When I say the country, I of course mean throughout England, for I live in England, in the United Kingdom. So I lecture throughout the southern half of England. I live right on the south coast, and I sometimes go into Wales and so on. Occasionally, I'll even go up as far as Scotland, but that's only on a rare occasion. The cost of travel sort of gets a bit prohibitive after a while. But the point is, I lecture all over the place, and generally speaking, I suppose I tend to be talking to groups that are interested in natural history. Here in England, of course, we have an RSPB group, Royal Society for the Protection of Birds. We also have a National Trust group, people that are interested in our history and in our natural heritage and that kind of thing. And in many of the different towns throughout the country, there are individual groups that meet up and enjoy evenings of entertainment from hopefully entertainment anyway, from people such as myself and so on. So that's the kind of thing. Obviously, I speak on fairly regularly, I suppose, to photographic societies, camera clubs and the like. And I enjoy an audience, I admit. I suppose that's why I do a podcast. I actually enjoy an audience. I get a bit of a buzz out of that. But usually, I suppose, I speak quite a long way from home. And the other night, I was actually asked to speak in my hometown, where I live. I was asked for a little gardening club, okay? Unusual kind of situation, and it was really funny to go to the gardening club, and not that I'm talking about gardening, I was talking about, I was talking about the American Project, okay? Loads of people turned up. It was absolutely packed. They moved tables to one side and put in chairs and so on. It's a good feeling, actually. But faces that were familiar. It's a funny feeling to talk to people that are familiar to you. It's a bit different to a normal kind of impersonal audience. But it's not often that I speak for gardening clubs. In fact, probably only do one or maybe two a year. But it's a different kind of perspective. People that are interested in different things. And they have their own small competitions amongst themselves. And this month's competition was to bring along daffodils. Now, daffodils here in England are a real symbol of spring. But actually, somebody said to me, the daffodils are late this year. And so the display of daffodils that they had wasn't particularly good. But when they say that they're late, compared to the wild daffodils, the daffodils that grow in the woodland, they're actually incredibly early. Isn't it funny how in our gardens we kind of force things to be even bigger or even more colourful or come even earlier in the year? We kind of want to exaggerate nature. And that really struck me. But actually, in some respects, it is quite a late season. Certainly, the snowdrops were late flowering, and hazel catkins are still dangling on the trees, you know, really for a long time. They're still really quite fresh on the trees. And daffodils, as I've said, are just about to appear. So in some respects, it is quite a late season. I was suggesting that daffodils were a kind of symbol of spring in the garden. But it seems to me that there are a variety of flowers, of course, that flower at this time of year, or over the next few weeks, really. They've not really started yet. And nearly all of them are yellow. Spring and yellow, the colour yellow, really kind of go together. Daffodils would be an excellent illustration of that, of course, an exaggerated illustration. You can't have anything much more yellow than a daffodil. But along with that, of course, primroses. They're very yellow, of course, and they flower at this time of year, or early in the season. And then things like celandine, lesser celandine, greater celandine, winter aconite, that's over and done with by now. But the very early flowers of the year, I mean, I know about snowdrops, but that's a kind of exception. The very early flowers of the year tend to be that yellow kind of colour. And then later on, other colours begin to come into their own. As we enter sort of May and well into the well into the summer months, then the purple colours and blues and this kind of thing begin to come into their own. And then, of course, if you do move into the heat of summer, then the hot colours of the pinks and the reds and that kind of thing, they begin to become much more prevalent. And so the seasons are reflected in the colours of the flowers. In fact, I used to say that if you were sort of plonked in a piece of English woodland, I don't know, if you were dropped from outer space, you know, wham, straight into a piece of English woodland, immediately you would know the time of year, more or less to within a few weeks, by the atmosphere of the woodland, the colour of the plants. Even if you don't know too much about nature, instantly there is a feeling of the season as soon as you land in a piece of English woodland. And a canopy of trees for a start. I mean, obviously, if there's no leaves on the trees, then that's going to tell you the time of year. You know, it's going to be a winter time of the year. If, on the other hand, the canopy of leaves is delicate and light and fresh, then clearly that's going to be spring type of months. If it's really heavy and, you know, overcast above your head and dark with heavy leaves, and that's going to be midsummer, and so on. The colours of autumn or fall are going to be clearly seen in the trees and so on. So the trees immediately give us an indication of the season. And then the plants at your feet, the flowers, the colours of the flowers, as we talked about, instantly narrow you down to a specific time of year. How dense the vegetation is under your feet and that kind of thing. Immediately, all of these things come together. The sound of birds singing all come together to push you in the right area of the time of year. Without really knowing too much about nature, you don't need to know the detail. It's just a feeling that it creates in a piece of English woodland. It's incredible, really. Anyway, along with the daffodils, the flowers, I suppose, in the garden are beginning on, or the plants, rather, in the garden are beginning to make a move, especially in the sort of areas that are like an old-fashioned herbaceous border. It's really interesting, actually. If you look at a really old-fashioned herbaceous border, many, many of the plants there originate in our own English countryside, in the English woodland. An obvious example are daffodils. You can still find daffodils in the wild. I shall later on in this year photograph daffodils in the woodland again, I suspect. I've certainly done that in the past, but you do get wild daffodils. So the herbaceous border reflects the countryside. You can get all sorts of different flowers. Foxgloves are often grown, aren't they? But of course now they have to be cultivated into funny colours. What's the matter with the natural foxgloves? I actually like the natural ones better. Plants such as Granny's Bonnets or Wild Columbine. You've got a Wild Columbine in America as well, if you're listening to me. I know that for a fact. It's different to our Wild Columbine, but it is still an Aquilegia species. Hey, have you noticed how gardeners have become so scientific in recent years? Granny's Bonnets isn't called Granny's Bonnets anymore. It's not even called Wild Columbine. It's called Aquilegia. I mean, crumbs, does it have to be? Can't it be Granny's Bonnets? Oh, well, no, I'm only joking, really. But yeah, lots and lots of plants within the an old-fashioned herbaceous border. Larkspur would be another one that would be. And many of these things are indigenous British plants. I'm desperately trying to think of the plants that would appear in an old-fashioned herbaceous border. And then, of course, a few years later, I'll say a few years, hundreds of years later, plants began to be imported. Exotic plants came in from other countries to grow in our flower borders, and that produced a very different sort of flower border again. I suppose speaking to a gardening club earlier in the week, or last week rather, made me think a little bit more about the gardens and what we did in the garden. Okay, well, it's been good to talk to you again. I think what I'll do is I'll close down at this stage, but I look forward to hearing from some of you as you email me. My name is David, of course, and you'll email me then at david@naturalfocus.co.uk. Okay, that's obviously my website as well, Natural Focus, NaturalFocus, naturalfocus.co.uk. I'd love to hear, you see, I'm talking about English gardens, or I have referred to English gardens. You know that I've travelled a fair amount to America and to Australia and Africa and this kind of thing. And so I know how different things are there. I haven't referred to that. Maybe you're going to email me then. That'd be great. And tell me about your gardens and any thoughts that you've got. Bearing in mind that, strictly speaking, we're really talking about nature. So it's nature and natural history and how that affects the garden. Okay, good to be talking to you. Catch you again in a few days' time. Bye-bye for now.